ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
I met with Coach Rodriguez this morning and informed him of my decision to relieve him of his responsibilities.
Didn't win enough football games.
You take that time and you get fired and you kind of just sit back and just wrote down what could I have done differently.
Every December, there's this conversation about getting rid of Gus Malzahn. The difference this time is it was expensive. It's going to cost Auburn a mere $21.5 million to pay him off.
Some kids grow up wanting to be astronauts. Others dream of being, like, marine biologists. But you know what? Kids are stupid. The job every child should be aspiring to is fired college football coach. Because long after you've been relieved from your job on the sidelines, the checks just keep rolling in. It's called dead money. And there's more than $500 million of it over the last decade alone. So today, investigative reporter Paula Levine unearths just how much schools are paying coaches not to work, who is really footing the bill, and what this all says about the dream of college sports. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, November 16th. This is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Paula Levine, I bring you on here because your reporting alongside Mark Schlabaugh is stunning to me. It's eye-opening. I mean, it shouldn't be. You've reported on the amount of dead money that FBS programs have spent on coaches over the last 11 years here. But before we get into all of that, just what exactly is dead money in the first place?
So dead money is money that a school will owe to a coach in a case where a coach was fired without cause, with time left on their contracts, and a contract that specifies that they're to be paid a specific amount. The most recent, biggest example was when LSU fired Ed Orgeron last month.
Just 2 years removed from the national championship, Ed Orgeron's run at LSU will end after this season, but will be paid the remainder of his contract, some $17 million.
Schools can do one of two things or a combination. They can pay out a lump sum or they can pay it out over time. And in his case, he is owed about $17 million. It will be parsed out in installment payments through the next few years through 2025.
So like the $17 million that Orgeron's getting through 2025 here, it all feels like the money you pay a coach to not work for you, Paula, in so many words. And I guess schools are just seeing this as just like the cost of doing business at this point. This is standard practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the best job to have.
Right.
For someone, for you to do poorly at your job, to be let go for that, and then get paid.
Paula, Orgeron signed that contract in January of 2020, to be extra clear here.
It is nuts. It's crazy. But you're right. I mean, schools do see this as the cost of doing business. They will say if they don't offer these contracts with this buyout provision, they will not get someone to come. They know the risk on the front end, but they claim, look, it's we have to do this or else we're just not going to get good candidates.
So the competitiveness of the marketplace is the rationale for why the numbers are as you have reported. And look, in your reporting, you focus specifically on FBS programs, so the highest level programs, what we used to call 1A programs, in college football and in men's and women's basketball. So how much dead money exactly has been given to coaches over the last 11 years?
From January 1st, 2010 to January 31st, 2021, public universities in the FBS conferences paid out more than $533.6 million. That's more than half a billion in dead money.
For those keeping track at home, yeah.
Right. To head coaches, assistant coaches, strength coaches in football and men's and women's basketball. It's actually more than that because our numbers include only public universities. They're the ones from whom we can get these records. Private universities don't have to disclose this. Mm. And then also factor in our cutoff was January of 2021. So this does not include payments for the coaches who were fired during or after the 2020 football and 2021 basketball season. So that would not include the payout to Ed Orgeron. If you extended that just for that additional year, you would have added another $107.6 million in severance pay before any sort of mitigation for the coaches and staffs from 2020.
So, Paula, you are somebody whose reporting techniques I'm always fascinated by. How exactly do you get information like this?
Extreme patience. this was fascinating to me because we are always requesting things from colleges, you know, sensitive stuff like things about, you know, sexual assault and medical complaints and so forth. And so I figured that requesting something that is as public as you can get, which is how much money a government entity spends,
yes,
would be pretty straightforward. It was not. We started making these requests in January of 2021. And it took a good 9 or 10 months to collect this information. So there were 130 FBS programs from which we had our list. 86 of those provided records. 4 said they had no responsive records, so that claiming they didn't make any payments. 22 are private institutions, which I mentioned before, are not obligated to hand this out. And 18 either provided no records or had incomplete data. And I want to call this out because I feel like you know how much I love transparency, right?
Paula Transparency Levine is how we introduce you generally on this show. Yeah.
Right. And there were, you know, there were two of those schools, like there were two Power Five schools, Virginia Tech and North Carolina, who just absolutely refused to break this down.
Paula, just to your point, though, to be clear, these coaches are employed by a public university. They are public employees. That seems like a thing that they should not feel so comfortable just getting away with ignoring.
Oh, it was maddening how hard we had to fight for this. In one case with Purdue, which is a public university in Indiana, I had to appeal all the way up to the state public records entity to get this information that they ruled in our favor, which I figured they would. But it shouldn't be that hard to get these schools to reveal this information because people need to know this. I understand some of these schools argue that this money's coming from boosters or we're a self-sustaining program. We pay our own way. All that aside, you still exist at the behest of a public university.
Yes.
And therefore, you need to be transparent about where your money comes from, where you spend it, and when you spend it. And if I were a taxpayer in any of those states, if I were a student, if I were an alumni, I would be enraged that my school is not being forthcoming about this.
Yeah, it's just absurd, Paula, that a public institution, a place that gets money from taxpayers, that it can get away with not disclosing where and how much money they're actually spending. But the data you did get, in the end, incomplete as it may be, what kind of a portrait did it paint of the dead money in college sports?
The overall number, which was the almost half a billion dollars that has just been paid out on this, it's no surprise that the Power Five conferences accounted for, you know, by far the majority of this is $471 million.
Mm.
when you look at individual coaches, there were 116 coaches who received more than $1 million in dead money. And you had a few coaches who actually were on there multiple times, which I found kind of funny. Like, I, and I have to point this out, being a graduate of the University of Nebraska, you look at Bo Pelini, he's someone, his take-in was $10.5 million. He was getting paid from Nebraska and from LSU. You look at Rich Rodriguez, who was getting $9.3 million. He's got three schools. He's got Arizona, he's got Michigan, and Ole Miss.
Paula, I mean, the double and triple dipping from beyond the coaching grave, that is an incredible job to have as basically a government employee.
I mean, that's impressive. It's really impressive to be getting paid for not doing your job at multiple institutions. I don't know any other industry where you can accomplish that. Football coaches were paid more than three times as much as men's basketball coaches. In fact, there was only one men's basketball coach who cracked the top 10. That was Thad Matta from Ohio State with a $9 million buyout.
Interesting. Yeah.
And the top 10 dead money schools, like the money is concentrated in that handful. Like, they doled out more than $205 million. That's almost half of the money that we reported.
So, Paula, I mean, imagining sort of the hierarchy here, it sounds extraordinarily top-heavy. Top-heavy in terms of football over basketball, as you just outlined, and also in terms of the most powerful of the Power Five, the very top of it, it seems to, this is where that sort of financial payout really does seem to balloon.
Yeah, absolutely. And people always want to know who spent the most, right? Because we love, yeah, in anything in sports, we love rankings, right? So Auburn is at the top. Auburn paid out $31.2 million. More than $18 million of that was paid to Gene Chizik and Gus Malzahn. My alma mater, Nebraska.
Go Cornhuskers, yeah.
Go Cornhuskers. Comes in at $25.8 million. And it wasn't just Pelini. It was Pelini, Frank Solich, Bill Callahan, Mike Riley. It's funny because this story came out right about the time Nebraska was deciding whether or not to keep head coach Scott Frost. Mm. And had he been out, that would have added another $20 million, and Nebraska would have been number one in something, which is this list. Texas, which comes in at number three at $21.5 million, that actually does not include the $24 million owed to Tom Herman and staff, because that firing took place after our count.
Right.
So you can see how one coach can throw things off quite a bit. And then so you have Ole Miss coming in next at $20.4 million and Kansas coming in at $20 million.
Jeez. No, I like the idea of us running through this. Like, this is our own college football playoff poll. These are our rankings. Congratulations to Auburn, Gene Chizik, and Gus Malzahn for getting the most for doing the least. Truly incredible.
There you go.
And coming up, Paula, I need you to tell us exactly who is paying for all of this dead money.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Paula, these are obviously massive sums of dead money. Where does all of it come from?
It comes from boosters. It comes from ticket sales. It comes from TV contracts. It comes from all of these outside places.
When you say booster, Paula, like, that's a term that we hear a zillion times. I think I know what it is, but I'm also not entirely sure. So how would you define what a booster is?
I would define a booster as someone who is a graduate of the university or who has very strong ties to the university, who has a lot of money, who has a lot of influence politically and within the social environment of the fan base. I think sometimes people use the term booster and donor, you know, interchangeably, although I think the difference is a donor is someone who gives a lot of money to the university. A booster is someone who gives a lot of money to the university and then expects some leverage. I mean, they're the ones who can pick up the phone and call the AD or call the president. And in that sense, I think they do have a lot of influence. And let's not forget the fact that if they're offering to donate X amount of money so the school can afford the buyout, I mean, that's clearly a pretty big message.
So ultimately, Paula, when you talk about the decision to hire these coaches at enormous salaries, to fire these coaches and pay out those enormous salaries still, like, who makes those calls knowing that the implications are this absurd?
Well, technically, the signatures that appear on these documents and the decision makers on paper are the athletic directors, the university presidents, the chancellors, the boards of regents, and so forth. You know, realistically, I would have to say in many cases, it's the boosters, you know, there's fan pressure, there's all the outside influences on these programs. And the other thing I would absolutely throw in here is the fact that these coaches have agents and these agents are very powerful.
Yes.
And I think when you started seeing that, I think that's when you really started seeing these contracts and these buyout provisions bloom.
So all of these agents, the representatives, they get cuts of all of this at significant percentages. Everyone is incentivized to boost the payouts here. I mean, when you spoke to some of the power brokers involved here in this dynamic, Paula, and you look beyond the numbers, you actually got to hear from them, what did they have to say about how this really works?
So the two I focused on were Harvey Perlman, who had been the chancellor at Nebraska during a lot of these coaching changes, and Steve Leith, who had been the president at Auburn until recently. And Perlman, he really reflected on this, saying, like, this is not something he ever, I mean, he sees the ridiculousness of these numbers. And one of the things he said to me, and he was kind of laughing when he said it, he said, we have a lot of football coaches on our salary.
A lot of football coaches on our salary. Yeah, it was horrible. I didn't like it. And of course, you get a lot of public flack for it, which I did. But as I say, it's part of the competitive context in which you're operating. And if you're not going to do it, then you're not going to get coaches.
And that's similar to what Leith was saying. And he was talking about in negotiating with Jimmy Sexton, who was Gus Malzahn's agent.
Yeah, super agent, very infamous and impressive in this world.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was talking about the dynamic of having to deal with the agent versus dealing with his employee, and how he said it really changed the dynamic. You know, I mean, he sort of speaks to that, how that really puts a lot more pressure and doesn't allow, at least in his opinion, the employer to really negotiate in good faith or in what's best for the university. He says it changes the team spirit of working together for the common goal of advancing the program to much more of an unfun business negotiation. I mean, you know, I guess it depends on whose side you're on there. I mean, if you're on the coach's side, then that's great for you, but yeah.
Well, Paul, it occurs to me as you say this, right? Like, you know, a university professor typically doesn't have an agent. You know, you're working for a big state school teaching, I don't know, biology. You're not getting a bidding war generated when your contract is up. I mean, this is, again, as much as there is an innocence that we should have all been sort of over in terms of its ruination by now, it's glaring to imagine how these public employees are building marketplaces that drain public institutions of their funds in ways that typically other public employees never even dream of doing.
Right. I guess to be devil's advocate there, you could say, well, that biology professor, that physics professor, no matter how good he or she is not bringing in millions of dollars to the university through ticket sales and TV contracts and so forth. So that's the other side of it, right?
So, Paula, we had just established the ESPN Daily college program power poll as dead money is concerned, but I want to get to a Hall of Fame for these individuals here. Who is in the Dead Money Hall of Fame among coaches? What names are we looking at?
All right. Now, so keep in mind, this is within our cutoff time, but here we go. So at the very top, we have Will Muschamp at $19.2 million. That includes $12.9 million from South Carolina and $6.3 million from Florida. We have Charlie Strong, who the total is $11.8 million. $10.1 million is to exit Texas, tacked on another $1.7 million after 3 years at South Florida.
Just to clarify and to just give even more shine to Will Muschamp, you're telling me that the South Carolina payout of $12.9 million that Muschamp is getting, that's number one, even before you factor in what Florida's given him.
Right. Exactly. He sort of gets a little bonus there from Florida. Third on the list is Todd Graham at Arizona State with $11.1 million.
I guess, you know, he had three straight bowl games, a couple of 10-win seasons. But man, Todd Graham with 11.1. All right. Good on you, or the opposite, I suppose.
And then you have Kevin Sumlin with a total of $10.8 million, and that is a combined $7 million from Texas A&M and $3.8 million from Arizona.
And that, Paula, is $10.8 million, just to keep the math in order here. That's $10.8 million that Kevin Sumlin's getting without a winning record at either school over those 7 years he coached there.
Right. And we have the aforementioned Gus Malzahn with $10.7 million. And keep in mind that this is our cutoff. So he had a $49 million contract that he signed after the 2017 season, and 75% of that was guaranteed. And it was kind of funny because in my conversation with Steve Leith, the Auburn president, he said he's to credit for getting that down to 75%. So there's a win there.
I didn't know Auburn graded on that generous of a curve at its institution, but hey, you know what? I guess that's true across college classes and in the university athletics department, sure. But if these schools are getting all this money, Paula, from outside sources, like TV contracts, from boosters, and so on, how much of this affects the economics of the rest of the university?
There are programs that legitimately argue, I think it always sort of is around two dozen or so, that they are self-sustaining, that the revenue that they make by holding sporting events and getting money from TV contracts pays for their expenses. Again, I would say that even though that may be true, those programs still exist because they are tied to and get, you know, intangible benefit from being part of a state university in the case of the public schools.
Right.
However, that's only a couple dozen. And we're talking about many, many, many more schools where they rely on money from student fees. They rely on money from the general fund of the university. They rely on money from the state. And in those cases, I think you have an even bigger complaint when you are padding these contracts with these buyouts, because how do you argue that you can pay all this money to these coaches when you're relying on students to pay a portion of their fees to the athletic department at the same time they're facing across the board rising tuition costs?
Paula, this is the question that I really have here is, you know, when you think about and take a step back and look at the university system economy, it has skyrocketed, right? Like year over year, it's only getting more expensive to go to college. Costs are out of control. And it sounds like what we're really having here is like a zero-sum game where if the coaches who are fired are getting paid X, that does have to come from somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the reasons that we sort of launched into this whole project was, you know, last year was a real test of the system with the pandemic and a handful of coaches agreeing to take, you know, salary reductions, but you had cuts throughout the athletic department. You know, you were really testing the strength of that system. And, you know, you're right, that money has to come from somewhere. It's a big question of opportunity cost, right?
Yes.
You have this money in the athletic department, right? You've got this money from these boosters. You've got this money from all of this, right? You perhaps have the money to afford these massive buyouts. But where could you better be spending that money, right? Could you be increasing the mental health resources for your athletes? Could you be investing more in athletic trainers? Could you be investing more in facilities? Could you be investing more in academics? You know, the athletic department could bail out the library or bail out the education, whatever it is. I mean, they've got the money to do that. I know what I'm putting out here is incredibly altruistic in a non-altruistic system.
How dare you, Paula? How dare you try to strive for better?
I know, exactly, right? Because any attempt at altruism is canceled out by the arms race that has existed for years and years and years in college athletics. And I do not see that going away.
So as the costs keep on rising, Paula, I do want to ask you to put on your rose-colored glasses here. We can both wear them. And just let's try to imagine how this problem of paying millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, over half a billion collectively at least, to unemployed football and basketball coaches, how does that problem get fixed?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people in a case like this, when you're looking at a systems-wide issue, would say, well, maybe the NCAA can do something. Maybe the NCAA can institute something. However, as we've seen in many ways, the NCAA's power is getting less. And it's not been a great time to be the NCAA in terms of enforcement. Although I think some people would still argue that maybe there's a role there. I don't know that that's a good answer. You know, the conferences have more power in this area. Is there something that the conferences can do? That would have to be something that the members themselves would have to agree to. And then you have to explore, well, what is legally possible? What limits can we actually put on this? That's beyond my expertise here. One of the things I would say, going back to the whole issue of the agents, and I don't know if this is something you can fix going forward, but I feel like when this all started, you had these very high-powered, very skilled, savvy agents going up against universities who don't deal with this and probably, you know, may not have had the best negotiators, may not have had the best legal counsel. You know, maybe it's a matter of the universities, you know, bringing more power to the table in that manner. That may be too late, but I'm not giving you great options.
Now, Paula, what you seem to be indicating as we stare through an attempt at optimism here, it sounds like you're not optimistic, actually.
No, I'm not. This question of how do you rein in spending in college athletics has come up before in other areas. It's come up in the argument about the crazy stuff spent on facilities and putting waterfalls and barbershops and stuff. Like, how can we spend this money? And if anything, there was a thought that maybe last year with the pandemic and that sort of brief moment of, oh my God, like, you know, we don't have the money coming in, like maybe that would have tempered people, but it doesn't seem to be doing that.
The period of austerity has not come from that global struggle.
Exactly. So if a pandemic crisis can't like sober people up here in terms of how crazy, out of control they are in the spending, I don't know what will.
Paula Levine, thank you at the very least for sobering up the rest of us.
I try. You're welcome.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.